We're back a day late. I hope you guys found a way to trudge through your Sunday without us. Dan just returned from Missoula. Couldn't swing it yesterday. We're going to talk about Missoula. We're also going to talk about the back 50, some other cool races that Maybird people have done that we've missed with all our gross incompetence. But Dan, maybe just to jump right into Missoula, you said that this was like the best race you've ever traveled to.
I just had so much fun the entire time. This group we went with was just so much fun. They basically we basically just went from one place to another place partying. And it was just so much fun. The kids were awesome. Maybird really, really represented well at that race. I'd be willing to bet we had more riders representing Maybird than any other team that was out there. So, just an amazing experience. We just had so much fun and, such a beautiful place. Like Montana was just so pretty. It was so fun.
The weather. Missoula is kind of the crowd favorite race. Like everybody goes to Missoula raves about it.
Well, it was kind of lame because, the race got downgraded from a junior series race to a normal race. So it didn't have as deep a point. So there's some people that didn't go because there weren't as many points being offered.
Wieners.
Well, and the thing is, a lot of these people didn't go because there's fewer points. Wouldn't have got points anyway, but I won't.
Ooh, that was shade. For those of you who didn't catch it, that was shade from Dan Draper.
But it was, the vibe there is just so awesome. It was just so much fun. We brought, Nina Martin brought along one of her Schemo friends from Poland. I called him Vortek, but I don't think I'm pronouncing his name right. But
I'm almost positive you're not. I feel pretty good saying you're probably not.
And he was just hilarious. And he got a race in a Maybird kit. He was amazing. He was just fascinated with America. And he was fascinated with our ranking system. And he would rank everything on a scale of 1 to 10.
Okay.
And it was so funny. He would just rank everything. And the few things that got 10s were Costco. He gave Costco a 10.
Costco is a 10.
Costco was a 10 out of 10. And Cafe Rio was a 10. He just, every time we asked where people wanted to eat, he would be like, Cafe Rio. And he also liked asking people what their favorite word was.
That's an interesting question. I don't know what my favorite word.
Yeah, what's your favorite?
My favorite word, ka-ching. I don't ka-ching. Know. What was his favorite word?
His favorite word was sogi.
And we need more international representation. We had some on Maybird when we first started. We need to get a little bit more. If you guys have friends in other countries, let's ship them kits and get some, you know, like get some international reach going. But I'm bummed I didn't get to go. I'm seeing the pictures and everything.
Oh my gosh. I can't, like, everyone out there was just so cool and just had so much fun and just such awesome vibes. You know, our racers did fantastic. You know, we had McCall and Brooklyn Schallenberger both got some UCI points.
Quick disclaimer, not going to touch everybody, I don't think.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Doesn't mean we don't love you. It just means we love some of you more than others.
No, but they both got UCI points, which is super exciting.
That's a big fat deal.
Yeah, super big
deal. Congrats
to
them.
But everyone did so solid. And we went on just some fun rides. We went out to Lake Flathead and ate really cool food and just hung out. It was just so much fun. And, you know, and I was on a ride with some of the Maybird riders, and they were just talking about how much fun they're having. And I just got thinking about how I'm just so overwhelmed with how cool our group is. And the ironic thing is like, I'm not cool, but
second that,
but somehow we were able to attract just some of the coolest, friendliest, most awesome riders out there. I love our culture. I love our vibe. And yeah, it's just such an awesome experience. So
this team's cool. Thank you guys for being cool. Yes. I love it. I love being part of this team. Not just, Missoula though, unless, do you have more Missoula stuff you want to
I could talk about Missoula all day, but let's talk about
we did have some Maybird riders representing closer to home at the back 50, which is a really cool race. I still haven't done the back 50.
Do you know what?
It just never works with my schedule.
It never works with mine lately because there's usually a national race on it, but it is a really, really, really cool race. And we had some pretty dang exciting results at that.
I know one of my boys, Riker, was right up there.
We had didn't Miles he get like Baker. Fourth in a lead
think,
or something?
I think
like
he was
that.
Right up there. Miles Baker won
junior
his category.
I think wasn't Seth Sherrington.
Seth was on that podium too. Again, we're gonna miss people. It doesn't
yeah,
it's
and
just,
Zoe and Quinn both.
Yep.
Both raced it. Yeah, we. Oh, and I know we had a bunch of my boys, my Orange boys raced it and
whoop whoop.
Yeah, so
Orange boys represent.
They usually do. They're the coolest kids. Like they're Maybird's future.
Super cool event. Usually happens at the Coyote Hollow Trails. Happened at Soldier Hollow this year, which is cool. Definitely one I'd recommend. If you haven't done it, I think this would be a good intro to long racing. You know, like I think this is it's on an Exia course. Because like True Grit's not that long, but it's pretty technical and point to point. It's like obviously super hard. I think if you were like maybe curious about doing those longer races, this would be a great one. So like mark it in your calendar when it comes out next year. Really quickly.
We also had Emma Daly.
God, I was going to have a really cool segue. I was going to say.
Oh, let's start
over. Okay. So anyway, mark it in your calendar if you want to do it. Now, we have to do a super special shout out. Because there's a really cool race that we completely neglected to do because we're so excited to talk to Bart because he's like our cool older brother that we idolize. Emma Daly was participating solo from Maybird, right? Like basically just going out and doing a race on her own out in Virginia,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, and she killed the short track. So, and Emma, if you haven't met Emma, she is... basically like exemplifies everything we want people to in Maybird to be like. She is just the nicest, sweetest person, but somehow she is just amazingly fast, both up and down. Like she is just such a solid rider and just such a nice person. So yeah, Emma, thanks for riding with us. You're just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, super, super. And like, please tell us when you're doing this stuff. I would say too, like if you're going to another place, do a mountain bike race while you're there. There's mountain bike races everywhere and it's super cool. Like don't like worry about it. But like, so we went to Washington one time and we did a mountain bike race there.
And it was one of the funnest,
really cool, memorable experiences.
Yeah, it was like one of the funnest things ever. Just doing some local midweek mountain bike race.
Yeah, rock up in your Maybird kit, you know, like get some cool pictures. Like I still remember doing that race, you know. Like look for alternative stuff. You know, if your family reunion's out in, you know, wherever, like Buttcrack, Kentucky next year, like find like their local race series and go do nothing against Kentucky. Kentucky's a beautiful place, but like, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, do a crit on your mountain bike. I don't know. Like we love that kind of stuff. I think that's super cool.
You know, one thing kind of getting back to Missoula that I kind of forgot to mention that was just so awesome to see is how many older Maybird
yes.
riders were there? Like, you know, the college age riders and so forth. And, you know, we had like Xander, Ryder, Dylan, Bryce, Connor, both Zoe's, Ella, just so many college age riders out there, which is just so cool to see, you know? So yeah, it was, just an amazing weekend. Thanks to everyone that went out there. A lot of families went out there and I'm just kind of on cloud nine right now. It's just been a really rewarding, cool weekend for me.
Yeah.
Quick
shout out while you gather your thoughts. Stuff's starting to dry out. Lots of Park City's getting rideable. I think that like a lot of areas are going to start to open up here. Quick reminder, don't ruin trails. If it's wet, don't ride it. Don't be afraid to hop off your bike and walk. If there's a bit of a muddy section, like if it's longer than a bike length, walk it. You know, like here and there, it's spring. Like if there'll be a patch of mud the width of your tire, you can ride through that. Whatever. Like don't tear up trails as we're starting to kind of get out of Shoreline and Corner Canyon and move up. I just wanted to pitch that.
Yeah, and if you're like aware of trails that are open, maybe give us a report or something.
Tell people, like, do you know, because like I don't know, do recon if you happen to hit something let other people know.
Yeah. So one thing I want to just throw out there real quick, a good friend of Ben Lowry has been running a while back started a sunglass company. And I ran into Ben once on a trail, and he was wearing these really cool sunglasses. I actually complimented on them because they looked really good. And he's like, he explained that his friend started this sunglass company. He let me try them on, and they were like super comfortable, and they looked really good, you know. And and so I actually reached out to him, to his friend Shoko, I think is how you say her name, and met up, and she let me try a pair. That I got. And yeah, there I just think it's kind of cool because it's like a local brand. And the thing with sunglasses is it's kind of like you've got like your pugs at the Maverick, which incidentally, do you know what Amy calls those, I guess?
No. What?
She calls them racist dad sunglasses.
like leaving the most vile comment you've ever seen on some like totally innocent thing. Like, you know, it's always in like the front seat of their car too. Have you noticed that? And they're always like looking slightly off camera with their like gas station sunglasses while they like, I don't know. That's actually pretty funny though.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of funny. You know, you've got kind of that end of the spectrum, and then you've kind of got like your Oakleys, which are how much are like Oakleys in?
Like a couple $100 for like high end Oakley or Smith glasses. Like a lot.
Yeah.
They're not cheap.
Yes. And it seems like it's kind of like every time I've kind of got something in between, I've been disappointed.
They're not very good. I tell people this all the time. People come in and I'm like, just get the Oakleys. It's kind of my thing that I land on. Like, if you're going to ride, it's worth it to have nice glasses. Because, like, the other thing, and this is shallow, like, glasses that in that kind of mid-range spectrum are usually kind of ugly is the other problem. And that, like, honestly, like, hand on my heart, I probably ride in Oakleys more because I think they look good than, like, any performance concern. Which isn't entirely true. Like, you do get nicer lenses and you pay for nicer stuff. But, like, you know, just, like, mid-range glasses, like, don't usually look as good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm usually kind of happy with the pugs because they're, like, $20.
Yeah, because you didn't spend anything on them.
And I'm happy with my Oakleys because I do like my Oakleys.
Yeah, you know, right.
But anytime I've tried something in between, I've just kind of felt
it's like I spent more money than I wanted to on something I still that I don't like. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of cool because that's kind of the niche they're targeting, which incidentally is kind of like why so many people wear Pit Vipers.
Yeah, that's true.
Is because Pit Vipers kind of fall in that range. And
yeah,
my thing with Pit Vipers is they're just kind of tacky. They're kind of like Crocs.
I think Pit Vipers are like fine. Like if you wear Pit Vipers, it's fine. I think Pit Vipers culturally were kind of like rebellious and like kind of edgy. And now, I don't know, it's like, I think, I don't know. Like, remember, like, people would, like, race into tutu, because, like, ooh, look at me, I'm being edgy. And now it's kind of like, I don't know, wearing a skin suit would be edgy, like, because everybody wants to, like, race and cut off jorts and stuff. Those are my unsolicited thoughts on that. They're actually pretty good sunglasses. I've used them.
Yeah, they're not bad, so.
But there's not a whole lot of other, like, options in that whole.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to kind of encourage people to check them out, because
what's this called?
It's called NAMI, like.
NAMI?
Yeah, it's short for tsunami.
Oh, like N-A-M-I.
N-A-M-I.
Is this a local thing?
Yeah, it's a local thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, super comfortable. And I think the best thing is they look really good. They're okay. Really well designed.
Looking this up.
Yeah, yeah, they've got a great website. They are offering a discount. I'll send out a message with the discount information. You know, they end up being around $100 a pair.
Okay, I think you have to Google NAMI sunglasses because NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I should join that. NAMI sunglasses. They end up being how much, did you say?
I think around $100 after the discount. It's like a 30% discount. But
okay.
Yeah, I've been happy with the ones I've been wearing.
Oh, this website is cool.
Yeah, so.
Dang, that's pretty good. They should do our website because ours kind of sucks because I made it. Cool. Okay. Hey, yeah, support these. You know, these do actually look good.
Yeah, they look
good. Yeah, go support a local small business. Get you some NAMI shades. Not sponsored, by the way.
Yeah, we're not sponsored.
We just like small businesses. We always disclose our financial interests and stuff.
Yeah. They let me wear a pair of sunglasses.
Dan owns a lot of stock in Zone 2 training, which is why he plugs it all the time. Another thing, quick thing, Tour de France is coming up. If you're into cycling, you should at least kind of be aware.
If you are a cycling,
if you are the concept of cycling, call me. I have some bones to pick. If you're in cycling, I think you should at least kind of know what's going on with the tour. You should know the big names and stuff. Netflix is releasing season 2 of their highly acclaimed Unchained documentary, which was like a really good, high-quality documentary they did following the tour last year. Go watch it. It's like 6 or 7 episodes that are like an hour a piece. It's like pretty good cycling content, especially if you're kind of like new to road racing, but kind of like cycling, where I think a lot of Maybird riders are. That's coming out tomorrow on Netflix. Use your
Too bad that didn't come out during trainer season.
I know, right? Well, I think it's just kind of like the pre-tour hype is when most people are going to watch it. Have you watched the first one?
No.
Okay, go back and watch it on the trainer season. But, you know, watch it. Make sure to watch it on your friends. Don't pay for Netflix because screw them. But it'll be out tomorrow. And I was telling Dan, I want to do a tour fantasy league this year. I used to do those when I worked at Backcountry with all my coworkers, and it was super fun. It's like fantasy football, but like way more tragic. So look for that. Be aware of the tour and stuff. I'm trying to think. There's some pro racing news. Do people care about the Criterium du Dauphiné?
No.
Primo Roglic won it. We had an American almost take it, which is cool. Shout out Matteo Jorgensen. I saw a thing. This is worth talking about in women's racing. SD Works, the kind of dominant team, had a really interesting incident where they rocked up to this race, absolutely crushed it the whole race. They had 3 riders in the top 4 in the final sprint. And what appears to have happened is the rider who was supposed to win decided to gift the win to her teammate. And so she kind of backed off and the teammate lost the bike throw. And both of the SD Works riders celebrated thinking that they'd won, and the rider in the middle actually did. So like, races aren't over till they're over. Don't ever
let other people
don't
win.
Do that. That's so, it's so rough because this happens a few times a year where somebody celebrates too early and they don't win. Celebrate after you cross the line.
But if you want to go viral on social media, that's a good way to go viral.
That is a good way
like
to go
celebrating
viral.
Early is a good way to
I can think of other good ways to go viral too. We'll do an episode about that later, but that was interesting. So beyond that, now that we've,
We need to talk about our last episode with Bart.
Oh,
that was amazing.
Oh, my
like
gosh.
If you missed that episode, stop listening to this one. Go back and listen to that one.
Yeah, it was really good. I want to do more tech stuff. That was fun talking to Bart about tech stuff.
It was actually really interesting talking to Bart about tech stuff. Yeah. That was super cool. But my goodness, Bart is really the Yoda of mountain biking.
He really kind of is. That's sort of an apt comparison.
Yeah.
He doesn't live in a swamp.
No.
That I know of. go listen to that.
You know, I think kind of my takeaway, well, I had quite a few, but one of them is it's just amazing what can happen if you allow this to become a lifetime sport.
Oh my gosh. I was saying this the other day. I can trace pretty much everything good in my life to cycling. Like all of the good stuff in my life, I don't think would have happened without this.
Well, and like, I think about like my most awesome friends and all these kids that I just love. Yes.
Nothing. Sorry. Carry on. Sorry to undercut your beautiful moment here.
I just all the awesome friends and the people I get to hang out and associate with through cycling is just amazing. It's just amazing how many disproportionately cool friends I've acquired through this sport, you know, but it really was just cool. Kind of like realizing, you know, Bart started when he was 14 or 15, but he didn't get to be his most awesome till he was in his 30s.
There you go.
You know, and so I think just kind of the message there, everyone, is be patient. Like, if you're not the most amazing person your first season, that's okay. You know, like, yeah, we all develop in our own times, but I just think that was really cool to hear that Bart, you know, when he was in his 30s, was at his peak. You know, that's when he really reached his potential. Which
that's a scary thought. Because I guess I've been riding with Bart. I'm like, when I was riding with Bart, wasn't his peak? That's a terrifying thought. I think I tell people all the time that I knew I couldn't coach the Pink Boys anymore after a few Bart rides when Bart started riding with the Pink Boys. And that was the point where I was like, Josh Kilbert and I remember we were on a ride like up Alexander Creek or something. And I just had this moment where I was like, I'm done. Like, I can't, this is, So, but that actually has been one of my biggest training motivators is I want to be able to do BART rides again. I want to be able to ride with the Pink Boys again.
Thank you.
More than I think I'm close.
Yeah.
I am close. Anyway, my self-actualization aside, that was a really good episode. If you haven't listened to it, what are you doing? This episode's way worse. Like, turn this one off. Go listen to that one. If you have limited time, that one's way better.
You know, and then the other thing that I'm just remembering I thought was super cool was how he talked about, like, just not letting a bad race ruin your entire season. And
oh yeah,
you know, and I've seen that happen so many times, like so many times when a bad race is kind of a straw that breaks a camel's back or something. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe this is demotivational. Like I've thrown my heart into this pretty hard over the last decade. I couldn't even tell you what my worst and best race were. It's all a blur. None of that is really mattered that much. Like, unless you're approaching this as a professional, which again, I'm on the record as saying is kind of a bad idea.
Unless you're destined for it,
it will find you.
Yeah.
It didn't find me. It kicked my teeth in and just slammed the door. But yeah, like don't worry about that. That's not the point. The point is to like push yourself to be better at something. So now that we've burned 20 minutes of time with our like motivational recaps and stuff, is there anything else we need to run over? I've got all my stuff.
Yeah, I think I've got all my stuff.
Okay.
I think I should probably warn people that like I was really hoping that this week's podcast would be the resurrected John Knobloch episode.
We're working on it.
Are we?
We have a well, so the people we're paying to work on it are supposedly working on it, ? I need to go upstairs and talk to him about that. But that will be a thing that will come back.
So I was I usually like to spend some time kind of when I do the deep dive or something, researching and preparing for
it. If we don't have it by next week, we're going to start getting bids from people on the team. The amount of money that we've offered to get this done is pretty generous and it's still not getting done. So like, we'll figure it out. But that'll come.
Yeah.
Because it was really good.
Hopefully it'll be our Father's Day episode.
Like, of all the episodes that we could have lost, like that one, like we've done so many garbage episodes. It's like,
why can't we lose this episode? Yeah, know, right?
Like, if this is your first episode, it'll be your last. But like, they're usually better. Well, but we have so much to talk about this week that we're gonna. And you kind of said that you're like less prepared.
Yeah,
one because this was more just like.
Yeah, there's a few things that we
could sell the rest of this podcast. And this is great. If this is a skippable ad, we'd be screwed.
there's a few things that I really wanted to review that I think are really important. I just didn't spend a whole lot of time preparing him, but I do think
that Dan does actually spend time on this.
I know it doesn't sound like it, but
oh, that was where I was going. Thanks for blocking my layup.
But yeah, the funny thing is I was, I'll get to that later, but should we just start?
Yes. Okay. You kind of gave me this like cut. And I'm like, why? Where are you cutting? You're like, I'm not cutting this.
Okay. So as I was riding in one of the most beautiful places I have ever been, it's a trail called Sound of Music in Missoula. I kind of got thinking about like the podcast and some things I wanted to say and just something I think that's super important that really, really could benefit so many of our athletes, you know, and it's something we've talked about before. And in fact, when I talked about it before, I think I did a better job than I will today. So maybe we'll have you go back and listen to that episode, but just to back up just a little bit, I've mentioned in the past that I kind of lump, you know, if you're into getting fast, which I hope everyone is, because
yeah,
I think getting fast is awesome.
Getting fast, even aside from racing, like just getting fast.
This sport is so much more fun.
Oh yeah.
When you're getting fast.
Incidentally, that's why e-bikes are doing so well in the market right now, is because they are giving people that. And like, that's where like, oh my gosh, mountain biking's fun. Right. Yeah,
like
that's kind of why
those people can know what like Andrew Preston feels like all the time, you know, or Ben.
Well, maybe not entirely kind of, maybe a little bit, you know, I think you probably retain your judgment when you ride an e-bike, but I don't know. Anyway, no, getting fast is good. Getting fast is kind of the key to staying in this. I think when you kind of have kids, you just sort of give up on getting fast because it like the sport chews them out. chews them up and spits them out, and they're kind of like, I don't care. I'm not going to be fast anymore. That's, you don't ride anymore if you're not like trying to get better.
And like, it kind of seems like a lot of times, you know, we're kind of mushy and let's just have fun. But I really do want people to get fast, because it really, you know.
Which you can do while having fun. Like, yeah, it's exactly. Not a choice.
In fact, yeah. I think, like we just said,
yeah,
being fast is making it more fun. Yeah. So
when people say they just ride for fun, now I'm like, no. That's all fun.
So we're definitely pro fast.
Yes.
Well, no, that's not what I meant.
Well,
we're for fast, I guess.
We're definitely not pro fast.
We I don't know. Never mind. I digress. But anyhow,
say that again.
And so I've talked about these things before, but I want to repeat them because I think that I really just want these principles just fresh in people's heads all the time, because I really think there's three keys to being your fastest.
Sweet. What are they?
And you'll probably remember these. The first one, we're just going to call it consistency, because we haven't come up with a better word. But consistency, you know, riding, you know, during the season, during the appropriate times of the season, you're riding 4 or 5 times a week, you know, you're just riding more. And I think for most people, that's mostly what most people need, really. So the first one is just consistency. That's going to get you 95% of the way there usually. So, the second one is kind of once you're good at being consistent, you do kind of need that consistency to kind of fit within certain framework. And the second one is just distributing your intensity, you know, just most of the time having the discipline to go fairly easy, but getting lots of volume fairly easy. When it's time to go hard, you go really, really hard, and it should be really, really uncomfortable. Now lately I've decided I haven't done much. I've done a few long races, but I haven't done any cross country races yet this year. And I want to do the rest of the I Cups. And I'm kind of like, you know, I kind of want to get a little faster for the, so I've actually started doing intervals.
Mm.
I've done 2, and the first set,
2 intervals.
Well, two sessions.
I was gonna say, I've done 2 intervals. So I want to get faster. So I threw a couple intervals in there, you know,
I did them on the first set I did on the trainer.
Boo.
And
just kidding. Trainers are valid.
And it was really, really hard. And I was like, it was really, really uncomfortable. And I was breathing raggedly and my heart rate was really high. And I was, but you know what? After I was done, it felt really good, you know? And so, that's something I need to do more of, you know, when the time's appropriate and it kind of fits within your race schedule and when you're trying to be your best and so forth, you know, when it's time to go hard, when it's not. So that's kind of the second one. The third one's the hugest one, which, you know, those first two, you know, you could do like a podcast episode on those first two, but number three, you could probably do 20 or 30 different episodes. 'Cause number three encompasses a lot, and that's taking care of yourself, you know, and that's, you know, lumped into there is just so many things like, you know, like recovery and sleep and nutrition and
fueling, mental health
and happiness
and your
fun.
Career. Like, it's kind of every, your relationships.
Yeah. There's just so much, you know, but honestly, like, taking care of number three is really what could make you on a completely different level if you do it right.
Yeah.
You know, and like, neglecting number three is what could really put you in a vicious spiral. And, you know, so taking care of yourself is just vitally important. So kind of in that light, an aspect of number three of taking care of yourself is that I want to talk about is like, just, and this is just going to be a review, but I just think it's so important and something we need to discuss before a race season really gets started. And that's just nutrition and fueling.
Yep.
And that's what today's episode is going to be about. It's going to be kind of a review episode. I went back and listened to one of our early episodes.
One of our earlier episodes.
One of our earlier episodes. It was called, Joe stupidly named it, I Pity the Poor Fuel.
That is a banger name. I apologize for nothing. I stand by everything. You know where to find me.
Yeah, so go back, and I would encourage you to go back and listen to that episode. I almost called it episode again.
You're like 2 for 3. You're killing it.
One thing about that episode that I do want to is we totally botched the Haribo gummy bear thing, where we didn't realize that Haribos had glucose in them, and we accused them of having fructose. So
I'm clutching my pearls as we speak. So. I don't have any memory of this. Has this been bothering you? Is this why we're talking about this today?
No, we did. We went back and did a correction.
We issued a redaction?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And as I was listening, I went back and listened to it today. The whole time we were talking about how we were just assuming that gummy bears had fructose in them and, wow. But turns out Haribos don't, they have glucose. But the cheaper ones do have fructose. So
now you can go look in a mirror and see all the people who cared about that. That's okay. Well, so, glad we cleared that up.
Yeah, I'm glad Haribo didn't like sue us or something.
Get a cease and desist from Haribo. Actually, if I ever get a cease and desist from Haribo, I'm framing it. So should we just start making like grossly defamatory statements about Haribo? Like, it's like, do you know that Haribo makes their jelly bears? What are they called? Gummy bears. Do you know that Haribo makes their gummy bears using gorilla fingernails? Do you know that they employ like child laborers?
Okay. Okay. Quiet.
Dan's afraid of big gummy bear.
Okay. So, okay. So we're going to talk about fueling today, and this is just going to kind of be a review. Go back and listen to I Pity the Poor Fuel. I thought we did an okay job considering it's us, you know,
set the bar nice and high there, Dan.
but first of all, just really quick, talk about I guess there's kind of a distinction between nutrition and fueling, and like fueling can be nutrition because it's kind of like there's not really bad foods or good foods. It's just about the timing, you know, like
it's what lever you're pulling when, right? Yeah.
But generally, like it's funny when I go to Costco. And I'm shopping for a race to like say I'm getting ready to go to iCup, and I'm filling my cart full of like I'm filling it full of like
cookies
and muffins, and yeah. Then the Hawaiian rolls and like sun chips and all kinds of like people probably I wonder if anyone's like looking at me and judging and probably
I think they are for more reasons than just that, but yes, yeah, probably.
Okay. So in general nutrition, I think, you know, we've talked about our no-duh diet, you know, where you just eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, your diet should be a huge variety of plants and fruits and vegetables and lots of protein. Like it's kind of interesting. We'll talk more about protein, but athletes need a lot of protein. You know, a normal, we'll say 150-pound person, the recommended daily allowance, they're supposed to eat about 54 grams of protein per day. That's about 7 cups of milk, 9 eggs, or a large chicken breast. An endurance athlete, it needs to bump the 54 up to about 95 grams. And that's the equivalent of about 15 eggs or 12 cups of milk or 2 medium chicken breasts.
You can mix and match. Doesn't just have to be those.
Yeah, please do mix and match. And spread out throughout the day. That's like the only actual research I did for this episode.
Crunch some numbers on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my prep right there. But like the protein is super important. The fruits, the vegetables, that's your nutrition. That should be what you do in your normal life, right? You know, we're not like, we don't come home from school, eat a sis, and then go take a nap, right?
I think there's definitely someone listening to this episode who has done that, but yeah, like that's not what I'd recommend.
If you've done that, let us know.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a crazy new low for cycling.
No, my favorite was you and Lamprick in the van. Sometimes one time we were driving somewhere and he was just sucking on a Sys while we were driving.
Hey, that's props to Sys that they make a gel product that's like good enough that you could eat it recreationally. That's awesome.
So that's what I kind of consider nutrition. Fueling, I kind of consider a little different. It's just where you do something that otherwise wouldn't be healthy and optimal, but it is in this context because it's allowing you to do more work and better work on the bike and so forth.
Like a gel is like the worst food you could possibly eat in a non-fueling context. Like for someone whose goal is weight loss, like a gel's like the exact opposite of what you want. It's like a very low density, extremely high calorie thing that's going to fill no space in your stomach.
Yeah, it's not going to fill you up at all.
But yeah. So this is why, and like I'm really passionate about this because nutrition really screwed me up in high school, and I've talked about that a lot on this. And so I'm going to try not to soapbox too hard. But like Dan said, there really aren't good and bad foods. Like when people get on like their stupid like TikTok nutrition influencer page and they're just like, oh, this food is toxic, this food is poisonous, whatever. Unless the food is uranium, it's not. It's fine. Like, we have regulatory agencies in the United States that make it really hard to sell poison, and you get sued if you would. So that's like a ridiculous, untrue buzzword, ridiculous garbage thing to say. There are foods that you should and shouldn't be eating probably at certain times, you know. And again, like speaking for the minors, like this sport, unless your doctor recommends it, unless your MD or DO recommends it, this sport should not be an avenue for weight loss. And if it is, you should listen to them and no one else. And like even for adults who do need a healthy way to control their weight, like it's pretty darn simple. Like, don't eat more calories than you burn. Mm-hmm. Boom. Now, the easiest way to do that is by eating a high fiber diet with
good
healthy foods, lots of plants, fruits and vegetables.
It's hard to eat too much broccoli.
Right, exactly. But like, don't overthink it. Like, really, truly, the no-dud diet is the way to go. Like, don't have 12 bowls of cereal for breakfast every single morning, because that's bad for you. But if it's your birthday, have a few bowls of cereal. Like, you know,
if it's race day, have 12 bowls of cereal in the morning if you can.
Yeah. And you know, and especially just for teenagers, like speaking to the me's out there, boys and girls who like are flirting with disordered eating all the time doing this sport, please don't worry about your weight. Please don't. Like, that I left so much on the table by doing that. So like,
yeah, worry about your performance.
Anytime we talk about nutrition, I just have to get on that soapbox of like, don't, like, foods aren't evil. They're fine. Just understand how your body works. Like, you know, take an anatomy class or something. Take a nutrition class if it's offered. Understand how your body works and just make smart decisions 90% of the time.
Yeah. And I'm definitely of the camp that focus on getting as fast as you can get and use the fuel necessary to do that, and your weight kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah.
You know,
if a guy without a shirt on pops up on your FYP telling you that these three foods are secretly killing you.
Or if they're
you,
wearing a tank top.
Yeah, he's going to the boiler room of hell. Like, don't listen to him. Like, click the little thing that says, I'm not interested, in the bottom corner that the algorithm probably ignores. But like do the note. Like, you guys probably already know just about enough to kind of understand what decisions are good. And like, for fueling really quick, not just on nutrition, you know, change gears. That's been a breakthrough for me. This season is forcing myself to fuel properly on the bike has totally extended my countdown to blow up problem. You know, like, I'm getting through much longer rides than I used to, and I'm feeling fine. So.
And you really have kind of reached a new level this year. I mean, I've always
sucked at endurance. Like, there's no two ways about it. Like, and this is helpful.
I used to kind of like be able to like beat Joe on a long ride. Now I think he's got me, but
you think, come on, old man, challenge you to a race.
Yeah. So,
but yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and we mentioned Andrew and Ben Bigwood earlier, like those guys are rocket ships and they're also really good eaters too. Like those boys can put down some food, and
starving yourself on the bike's dumb.
Yeah. And
don't do it.
Yeah.
Hey, also really quick, you don't need fancy stuff that you buy at a bike shop. Doesn't have to be honey stingers. Doesn't have to be Sys gels. In a race, it probably should be.
Yeah, and we'll talk. And I pity the poor fuel. We talked about that a little bit. Let's kind of review kind of what, like, Because we kind of talked a little bit about then about like, you know, is there a reason to buy like something at the bike shop versus something at, like candy at the grocery store? Is it the same thing? Is it going to do the same thing for you? Is there a reason to spend more on marketed actual cycling fuels? And so really quickly, there's mainly two different types of sugars that we're dealing with. There's glucose and fructose. And basically our body, you know, whatever we eat, it eventually kind of converts it into glucose so we can use that as a fuel. Some things, it does that quicker than others. And you know, and in fueling, you want something that's like really quick. So you basically want pure glucose. And so in any event under an hour, glucose is what you want to fuel those efforts, anything under an hour. Now, glucose is, you know, in commercial products, it's usually in the form of maltodextrin, which is basically the same thing, but it's not sweet. And so, you know, and anytime you see something with maltodextrin in it, that's basically glucose. Glucose basically goes directly into the bloodstream, you know, immediately, and it's absorbed really, really quickly. So we can, now this is important to remember, during exercise, most people can absorb about 60 grams per hour of glucose. So that's glucose. Now fructose, which is what's found in like most of the candies you would eat, most of the,
yeah,
like Twizzlers.
We subsidize corn production heavily in this country. So everything has like some kind of like the most common form I think people are probably familiar with is like high fructose corn syrup is probably where people know that word from. Mm-hmm. And fructose in a lot of different forms is present in like a ton of stuff that we eat.
Yeah. No, fructose isn't processed in our bodies as quickly as glucose. It's actually processed in the liver. It's very typically, it's less healthy for a lot of reasons. And, you know, and generally in like a normal, healthy, no duh type setting, you would try to avoid things with.
Yeah. Like the sedentary adult probably, you know, like it would be a good rule of thumb that like products that use, you know, like high fructose corn syrup are probably products that are not ideal for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But for you guys, and really quick, and not to like undercut your point there, that is all true and it's all great. But I think if you are currently not fueling, let's just focus on eating something like whatever, like make a PB&J with a single slice of bread, put it in a bag.
So PB&J is amazing. It's really, really good because, right, white breads are basically, they basically turn into glucose almost immediately.
Boom.
So white breads are really good. So,
great.
So yeah. So
but yeah, I'm just saying like start wherever.
Yeah.
Like we're talking, we kind of give you the optimized answer for those of you who are kind of there, but want to get all the way there. But I think most people aren't even kind of there. So like, if you need to start, find something that you can eat on the ride. Like don't be hungry when you're riding.
I won't argue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so with fructose, most people can only process about 30 grams of fructose an hour,
which is not a lot,
which isn't a lot.
Very low.
And with glucose, most people can process about 60. So for most people, for your races and your hard efforts, you that are under an hour, you really want fuels that are mostly glucose. For most people, if you try to do 60 grams of fructose an hour, you might get gut distress. So I think that's super, super important to remember. Now, you're starting to hear a lot lately that people are kind of discovering that, you know, if you can combine the two, it makes it so you can do more. And the thing with fructose is people can actually train themselves to tolerate more fructose and process more fructose. So basically, like, if you're doing events that are longer than an hour, like if you're doing like a point-to-point or a road race or something, you could do 60 grams an hour of glucose, add 30 grams an hour of fructose, so now you're up to 90 grams. And some pros have even, you know, some pros have kind of trained their guts to be able to kind of do like a 1-to-1 ratio where they're up to like 120 grams total, 60 grams of fructose, 60 grams of glucose.
Which is a ton. Don't go try and eat 160, 120 grams of carbs in your extra diet.
And one thing I just want to point out too is you're starting to hear a lot about that, but that's really not going to benefit you in a cross-country race. That's just, yeah, that's just kind of too much. But like if you're training like for a point to point or a Leadville or something, that would be.
That's a game changer. If you could train yourself to eat that much in Leadville or point to point, holy smokes.
Yeah.
You're going to go twice as fast.
And I've actually kind of heard people say that really it's almost kind of the new doping, you know, that people are able to process so much more fuel than we did back in the 80s or
90s. I'd love to know what like Pogacar and Keegan are doing in the fueling world, because I think that'd be super fascinating. I can't wait to learn about it in 10 years.
they're definitely professional eaters. But,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, you're going to hear about that, like the 120 grams an hour on Trainer Road or whatever. Don't think that you have to do that during a Nike race.
No.
Yeah, that's...
No. Because, like, you kind of have to be eating basically constantly to do that. Like, any opportunity where your hands can be off the bar for a sec, you kind of have to be shoving food in your mouth. And again, like I have a delicate stomach, and I think a lot of people do, like you, especially if you're in that boat, like, you know, work your way up.
I also think that if you're in that boat, you've kind of crossed a line that's not healthy anymore.
Yeah.
You know, performance and health aren't always the same thing.
Yes. That's so true. I say this all the time that like people who like the Tour de France is not good for you.
Yeah.
Being professional cycling weight is not good for you. They do that under the supervision of doctors and they walk a real fine line and people don't do it into their like late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's really something you can't do to your body all that long. So don't.
Yeah.
Don't.
So I guess my point there is if you are doing an event that's under an hour, we'll say under 90 minutes either.
Sure.
Basically any XCO
cross country and cross, you know, crits.
Your fuel source of choice should be mostly glucose.
Yeah.
At that point. And that's where like the commercial ride products kind of,
they make sense, but they also kind of end up making sense for those. Because those are really high intensity thing where it's like, it would be hard to like be tooling around with a big old sandwich in the middle of like a Nike race. Right?
Yeah.
But you can get a gel down pretty easy.
Yeah. And that's why I love the Sys gels. They're super easy to eat.
Not sponsored.
Yeah, they're super easy to eat. They're also isotonic, you know, so they basically the osmolality is the same as that of your blood. So it absorbs into your system really, really quickly without pulling water from your bloodstream and lowering your blood volume levels. So super smart there. And it's just really, really easy to get down under intensity. Like another example is like shot blocks. I actually like shot blocks too.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of keep a bag in my pocket. Their container is designed so you can just kind of squeeze one out, grab them with your teeth and pull them out. They're softer than like gummy bears or Skittles or something. And again, they're more glucose than fructose. So you could handle 60 grams an hour of those. So that's during a race, but during like a normal ride, like when I do my Saturday rides, I bring like King Hawaiian rolls with a little bit of peanut butter and jam.
Oh yeah.
Tastes so much better. It's like,
it's not really economical to fuel all of your riding on gels. Like the gels are what, over $1 a piece right now?
Yeah.
Like well over $1 a piece. Like it's, I don't know if you've got that kind of money, good for you, but like, don't have to do that.
No. And I don't think it's good. I don't know if this is healthy or not, you'd probably know, but like I love to use fueling as a chance to eat things that normally would be considered a treat.
Sure, sure.
I don't know if that's healthy or not.
I get what you're saying. I think there's a way that could be bad, but like, I kind of get what you mean. And you know, it's kind of nice to be like, and this is speaking more for our adults here. Like if you really love your Banbury cross donut, like strategically eat one like right before, right after the big ride, you know, cause then, you know, like for the adults, I don't think kids should have this relationship with the food, but like, be strategic.
Yeah. Cause Yeah, when your furnace is burning hot, you can kind of throw anything into it, really. Yeah,
but like if you're on a trainer in the winter, like if you love, like I love my, you love me some Reese's Puffs, that'd be the time to eat Reese's Puffs. If you're on a trainer, you just need to get some fuel into your body.
And that's kind of why I feel like I love eating cereal, you know, and so if I'm just going to go ride the trainer, I would rather have a delicious bowl of cereal rather than choke down a sis, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So I kind of use it as a good, it's kind of just a win-win to me, you know, like I'm fueling the work and I'm eating something that I enjoy, but it's, I'm timing it at a time when it's actually healthy.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if I eat that bowl of sugar cereal right before I go to bed,
right,
that's a less good time to eat that, you know?
So like Tessa and I is like one of our favorite treats is In-N-Out Burger. We love In-N-Out Burger. And so in the winter when it's like super depressing and stuff, we were doing the Maybird Swifts every Wednesday night. That was like my rituals after every single one of those. Cause it's like a long time to be on the trainer, right? An hour and a half, you know? Like I was like, that'll be our In-N-Out date night where we'll like, after I'll throw on my clothes, we'll go down to In-N-Out and I'll get a nice, nice warm, salty burger after this hard spin in the depressing February. You know, like, now again, I don't think that kids should be going and saying, oh, I can't eat my favorite food until after I've ridden for 8 hours. Cause that's bad. More for the adults. Be strategic, right? Like foods aren't virtuous or evil. They're just fuel. And knowing how your body works and knowing the best ideal times to eat that food most of the time is how you sustainably like have a diet that makes sense, that makes this sport sustainable for you.
Yeah, but I do think timing is definitely
critical.
You know,
100%.
Because, you know, there's foods that could be bad at one time, good at another time. It just is.
Have a salad for lunch on Wednesday when you're at work at your desk. Have a big old, like, pork burrito at Cafe Rio with tons of protein right after that big hard ride because that's what your body needs, like recovery-wise, right? Make smart choices.
And it's just kind of win-win because you're eating foods that you like enjoy, but you're timing it so it's beneficial. And
yeah, and make no dumb choices. Like if Diet Coke tastes the same to you as regular Coke, like probably drink Diet Coke because it's fewer calories, right?
Unless it's right after a big ride, drink the sugar Coke.
Then drink the sugar Coke, right? Drink the Diet Coke at your desk and the sugar Coke after the ride in the parking lot, right? Like just make, these are common sense things. Yeah, food is not good or evil. It's just fuel.
Absolutely. So yeah, so... Again, I say this all the time, but I just know so many riders that if they could get better at fueling their workouts and fueling their racers, or the races, it's going to easily put them on a different level.
Oh, yeah.
Like my daughter, Amy, who would never listen to this podcast, so I feel really safe mentioning her. if I can get, like, I have a hard time getting her to eat before she goes on a ride, but if she eats... she's a different rider.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't, she just struggles and she hates it. And, but man, if I can get her to eat, she's surprisingly good, you know, and it just makes such a difference. And, I think for some people that just comes easier, you know, but
it's hard for me to eat on the bike. I'm one of those people, like I eat way too much off the bike. Like it's one of my crutches. I'm a stress eater. But for whatever reason, like on the bike, it's hard for me to eat because you're, especially mountain biking, you're busy. You've got stuff going on. You're running like a complicated machine underneath you, right? And obviously, like, don't be like in a descent trying to eat a gel at a race, right? But like, you have to kind of go out of your way to do it. And like, some of the boys on my team have a timer that goes off on their Garmin every 20 minutes where it's like, you need to eat a thing every 20 minutes.
And that's what I do when I do like point to point or a bigger ride. Every time. Every half hour, if it's like 10 o'clock, I'll eat something. When it's 10:30, I'll eat something. When it's 11 o'clock. And that's at like an endurance pace.
Right.
If I was at a race pace, I'd probably do it every 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I would eat something every 20 minutes. And, you know, and like I'll do that. And on some big, huge, stupid ride that I do, I end up feeling really pretty good at the end. But if I kind of let the tank run empty and I bonk and I don't stay on top of the fueling. I feel like garbage after, and it takes a week out of my training schedule.
Yeah. You can kind of eat to, I think it's good to eat to hunger in just your normal life. Like eat when you're hungry and then stop when you're full. That's, you can't fuel cycling that. If you're hungry, it's already game over. Like you've fallen off the cliff and you can,
you gotta
maybe
be...
arrest your free fall a little bit. Like if you're hungry, you've messed up. And you're going to pay the price. Like if you, and that's, I think a lot of people already do that or even do that and then still don't eat. So like if you're getting hungry, you've already failed. Go back to square one and try again.
And I know, and two, I know a lot of riders, that really, really struggle eating on race day, and they struggle eating during the races. And I think that one of the easiest fixes for that is to practice it when you're not racing.
Yep.
You know, because we've talked about it before, you know, like a lot of times when people are stressed, it shuts off the blood supply to your stomach and,
yep.
You know, it's just kind of an autonomic response, and that's really normal to not want to eat when you're stressed. You know, your body has better things to do. It's running from the lion or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and
your body doesn't know what mountain bike racing is.
Yeah.
You're terrifying it all the time.
But if you're really good at like fueling your day-to-day workouts, and especially you're practicing fueling your key workouts, it's going to get easier on race day.
Yeah.
And I know that's always going to be more of a struggle for some people than others.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is, it's something you do need to work on.
This might be, you might make me cut this. I hear people all the time like, before I was like, oh, I can't eat. If I'm going to eat something, I'll feel sick. I'm like, that is the lesser of two evils. Maybe just deal with that and be fueled. You know, if it's going to make you puke for 20 minutes before the race, that's probably not it. But I don't think most people are that bad. Like, I think most people are like, it would be slightly uncomfortable for me to eat something right now and do it. That's a great trade-off.
Well, let's actually do talk about that, because that is kind of an interesting dilemma that some people are faced with, you know,
right.
like if you do eat before your race and it makes you throw up, it's not a benefit.
Right.
You know, we need to kind of get past that point. And if that is a problem, you know,
but really, I think for most people, it's not, I'm going to throw up. It's eating doesn't sound pleasant at all right now. And I don't want to do it because I'll feel slightly sick. And if that's the case, do it. Like, deal with feeling slightly sick.
Well, let's talk really quick about some guidelines for fueling for a race/hard workout. Because I really think that, especially those that struggle with fueling on race day, every time you do like a key interval workout, you should kind of rehearse your race day fueling a little bit.
Yes, great time to do it.
Yeah. So let's talk about just some really simple race day slash hard workout fueling guidelines. So the first thing is just like, say your race is on a Saturday. I would start Friday morning. I would start eating, just kind of simplifying your carbs a little bit, you know, simplifying your eating more carbs, a little less protein, a little less fat, a little less fiber, you know, just make, you know,
bran flakes and broccoli are great for you in your normal life. Maybe not leading up to a race.
Yeah. You know, you'd want to just, yeah, do like oatmeal's good,
mm-hmm.
pancakes.
Oh yeah.
Burritos, the tortilla's got like tons of carbs in it.
Mm-hmm.
Bagels, I mean, a little bit of fiber is going to be fine.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
you need to eat, probably still, you'll have other problems if you're eating no fiber. Don't
yeah,
do that.
Exactly. You know, like a burrito with rice and beans is really good. Like obviously pasta, you know, just start eating more of those things. Like the Friday morning before your race, just kind of stock up. And this is for like a 90 minute race. I think starting kind of the day before is probably good. Now, what this is doing is this is basically just kind of restoring your glycogen stores, which is how your body stores glucose. It stores it locally in the muscles, so it's very, very accessible. This is the fuel of choice when you're racing, is your glycogen stores. This is way more important than what you eat the morning of your race or what you eat during the race. You know, making sure you come to the race with your glycogen stores like totally topped up for a 90-minute race is by far the most important. So say you are someone that like really, really struggles with, you know, like if you try to eat anything the morning of the race, you just throw it up and you get really, really sick. You know, that's...
We'll work on that.
We'll work on that.
But you can definitely fuel before.
Yeah. You shouldn't be throwing up the day before. What, you know,
if you are, that's a doctor problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you are one of these people that just can't eat the morning of the race, that's probably going to be okay. But you do need to really, really try to stock up as much as you can that day before, maybe even do it 2 days before if you're one of these people. So you can just come there with super loaded glycogen stores ready to go. And those glycogen stores are probably going to get you through a cross-country race. Now, here's something I just want to clarify my stance on. I've heard a lot of people say that you really don't need to fuel during a cross-country race because you have enough glycogen on board to get you through. I definitely disagree with that because, you know, as your body starts to run low on glycogen, it sends signals to your brain that says, okay, we're running low on fuel. We are going to slow you down. And that's called a bonk. And if anyone's ever bonked,
not a good time.
It's amazing. Like bonking is amazing how you can go from,
I've laughed to myself bonking before because it's such a stark thing where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is crazy.
Like yeah, it's like your body just puts you on low power mode.
It puts you in limp home mode.
Yeah. And yeah. You really can't do like more than 80 watts. It's like,
it's when it's a survival mechanism because mm-hmm. human beings are really good at like, you know, tracking that elephant herd for like 10 days until they just kind of wear it out. Like, you know, we're different than like a cheetah, right? That like, I think we've evolved to like, if your body's in that situation, it's like, oh, we need to like be able to continuously move for a longer time. We're going to lower the intensity to make it so that you can get back to where you need to go. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, don't.
Yeah. Cause it's there. Like, once you bonk, you can keep going for a while.
Yeah.
But you're going super slow.
Can I throw out, and maybe you disagree, I don't think it needs to be a huge amount of food in a cross country race though. Like I think a gel, a lap is maybe a good.
No, that's my recommendation.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I usually do. Like shoot for a gel, a lap. If you miss, if you're doing four laps, and you miss one, it's probably not the end of the world.
And but that like, try does, to get one. Yeah. And that does a few things. Like one, it sends a message to your brain that fuel is coming in.
Energy's still there.
Yeah.
Don't panic. Right.
Yeah. And also what it does is it helps preserve glycogen stores, you know, so when you finish the race, it's going to like not take you as long to recover and replenish those glycogen stores as it would if you deplete them during the race.
Right.
And yeah, my recommendation is one day before you start carb loading and when you're carb loading, you don't want to make yourself sick, but you do want to, you know, push it as much as you comfortably can.
Yeah.
You know, right now we're fueling. This is an optimal nutrition during a normal sedentary week. You know, this is something that's a little different. It's for performance and it's, you know, but it's going to be very, very beneficial. So that's the first one. And then typically the morning of your race, I would try to time your meals so you eat a meal 2 hours before you start. And we explained before kind of why that 2 hour window is there. Like when you consume like glucose, basically it signals an insulin response, which takes which lowers your blood sugar. And when your blood sugar is low, you get kind of like dizzy and so, you know. And also something similar happens when you exercise. It opens up your GLUT4 transporters, which does basically the same thing. It'll take glucose out of your bloodstream and into your muscles, but without insulin. And so some people, if you eat too close to a race, it makes your blood sugar drop. And the GLUT4 transporters kind of make it like a double whammy. So it makes some people get really lightheaded when they race. And it doesn't really bother me, but we knew a girl once that she was crashing in races all the time. And
we're like, what the heck's going on?
We found out it was because she was getting really lightheaded because she was eating too close to the race. So it also kind of might cause gastric trouble for some people. So usually, you know, try to plan it so your meal's about 2 hours before you start. Don't really eat anything during that time. And then right before you start, about 10 or 15 minutes before you start, eat a gel or 3 shot blocks or something, to start getting some fuel in place. And then like Joe mentioned, during the race, try to get like 20 grams of carbs per lap.
That means most gels are about 20 grams.
Yeah, most gels are about 20. I think shot blocks like are about, I think three is about 20 grams.
It's similar.
Yeah, it's like you have try to have three shot blocks a lap or something, or just.
Yeah. There's a practical skill component to this. Being able to grab a gel out of your jersey pocket is a skill. Work on it. Learn how to do it.
Yeah, when you're doing your group rides and stuff, eat while you're moving. Don't stop and eat.
Yeah.
Eat while you're riding.
Oh, don't litter. Don't litter. Don't assume that somebody is going to come and pick up your trash on the course. Sometimes that's true. Don't assume that. Put it in your pocket. You'll get sticky. It's fine. You've got bigger problems. Don't litter. If it's in the feed zone, that's probably fine. Safe to assume someone will clean that up. Every time I do an iCup, there's gel packets everywhere. Don't do that.
Yeah. So just try to get to a point where you can take 20 grams per lap.
That's very doable. And then, I promise you can do it.
And then at the end of the race, try to take a sis as you're ending the race. Because you really, especially with when the NICA season's going, you want to recover from that race as quickly as you can so you can start training for the next one. Mm-hmm. If you deplete your glycogen stores during the race, it's going to take you longer to recover from the race.
You're paying for that in training days.
Yeah. So
don't do that. That's a bad deal.
And then another thing to throw out there too is hydration is critically important. We've done at least a whole entire podcast on that. And it would probably take an hour to do that justice, but make sure you're hydrating.
Your body isn't just losing water when you sweat. It's losing other stuff. You got to replace that too. This is hard because it gets expensive. Doesn't have to be scratch. That's probably ideal. Again, you could go in this for an hour, but for performance sake, for long days, for sure, be drinking some mix, have. Yeah.
Yeah. And also with hydration too, know that if something's like scratch has, it has sodium and it has carbohydrates, and that actually helps it absorb into the bloodstream quicker. So usually if you're drinking some type of drink mix that's not too strong or too overly concentrated, but has something in it, it's probably hydrating you better than just water.
Yeah. If you're not drinking water, let's start with that.
Yeah.
You have to be drinking water. Don't be short on water. Ideally, your body's losing stuff that isn't water too. So.
Yeah. And I want to do a refresher course.
These are all big. Yeah.
Yeah. Hydration would be just keep that in mind too, because it's part of it.
Oh yeah.
So again, I know that there's a lot of kids that struggle with fueling. And I know that this is probably it's hard to compare how much training you would have to do to equal the benefits that you get from just good fueling.
I'm going to say a 10 to 20% increase in performance for the average person is my guess, I think for the average person,
there's very few things that you could say that to.
Yeah. And I should say that's enormous. That's huge. That's so big.
Yeah. Out of all the things we could talk about,
this is probably the easiest, lowest hanging fruit for most people.
Yeah. Boom. And so really pay. And the thing is too, is if you're good at fueling your work, you're going to recover quicker. You're going to spend less time in, you're going to spend less time in a bad state, basically. You're going to be recovered quicker. You're going to be able to spend more time training. Fueling is just super important. If it's something you struggle with,
work on it,
experiment, find things that work for you.
Don't listen to shirtless douchebags on the internet
or with tank tops.
Yeah.
So
sweet. Well, this is good. I think we'll be seeing more of these refreshers. I think this is good. I think good and necessary. We've hit so many things. I think it's good to kind of circle back. So we'll be doing more of those as we get into the NICA season and race season. Make sure you're going to your NICA rides. Don't skip out on NICA. You're not too good for NICA. If you think you're too good for NICA, you have some serious ego problems to think about. Go be supportive, help your coaches, be good trail stewards like we've talked about.
Do you know what? Be like, if you show up and you're this awesome, cool national racer,
yeah,
like other kids like to see that, and it inspires them.
That's
to,
great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Be that good example. Ride safe this week. If you guys have any questions,
are we going to do a magic word again?
You know, let's do a magic word. Should we do osmolality and just see how many people can spell it correctly?
Okay.
Because I can't. The magic word is osmolality.
I really hope I get a lot of texts.
Send those to Dan.
Osmolality. That'd just make me
now
happy.
Now that I'm back in the bike industry, I have so many texts, I can't look at them all. Send your secret word to Dan. I never really explained, like, close the loop on what the secret word actually does. It's just kind of funny for us to be like, oh, yeah, there's Amy Larkin again. You know, like, that's how I have my weekly conversation with Amy Larkin. Yeah, ride safe, and we will look forward to talking to you guys next week.
Okay.